Chapter 2, Colonizing America, 1519 to 1733. Why it matters. Spanish, French, and English colonists came to North America. The colonies they founded often reflected the values and traditions of their homelands. These values and traditions helped shape core beliefs that most Americans share today. The impact today. Several developments of the early colonial period are evident in the nation today. The language and culture of the southwestern United States reflect the influence of the early Spanish settlers. Religious conflicts convinced the colonists of the importance of toleration and freedom of religion, values important to Americans today. The democratic traditions and institutions of the modern United States originated during colonial times. Section 1. The Spanish and French Build Empires. An American Story. In the spring of 1519, a courier arrived in Tenochtitlan, capital of the Aztec Empire. He had news for the Emperor, Montezuma II. Bearded white men bearing crosses were encamped on the eastern shores of the Emperor's realm. Montezuma was worried. For several years, he had heard reports of strange men with very light skin operating in the Caribbean. His subjects had also seen towers or small mountains floating on the waves of the sea. Now these strange white men had come to his lands, and Montezuma did not know what to do. The men on the coast were Spanish soldiers. As they watched the soldiers, the people of eastern Mexico felt both fear and awe. One Aztec later recalled, "They came in battle array, as conquerors. Their spears glinted in the sun, and their pennons fluttered like bats. They made a loud clamor as they marched, for their coats of mail and their weapons clashed and rattled. They terrified everyone who saw them." Quoted in The Broken Spears, the Aztec account of the conquest of Mexico. The Conquest of Mexico. Leading the Spanish march into the Aztec Empire was a 34-year-old Spaniard named Hernán Cortés. At age 19, Cortés had boarded a ship bound for the Spanish Indies, determined to make his fortune. He had no idea then that 15 years later, he would overturn a civilization and change the lives of millions of people. The Spanish encounter the Aztec. In 1511, Spanish troops led by Diego Velázquez conquered Cuba. Cortés took part in the invasion, and his courage impressed Velázquez. He rewarded Cortés by giving him control of several Native American villages. 6 years later, smallpox swept across Cuba, killing thousands of Native Americans. Without Native American labor, the farms and mines the Spanish had built in Cuba could not function. Velázquez asked Cortés to lead an expedition to the Yucatan Peninsula to find new peoples who could be forced to work for the Spanish. He also wanted to investigate reports of a wealthy civilization there. On February 18, 1519, Cortés set sail for Mexico. He had 11 ships, 550 men, and 16 horses. The invasion begins. After crossing the Gulf of Mexico, Cortés landed in the Yucatan Peninsula. There he found a shipwrecked sailor, Jerónimo de Aguilar, who spoke the local language and could act as translator. Despite this advantage, Cortés could not prevent an attack by thousands of warriors from a nearby city. The battle showed that the Spanish had a technological advantage over the local people. Spanish swords, crossbows, guns, and cannons quickly killed more than 200 warriors. As a peace offering, the leaders of the city gave Cortés 20 young women. Cortés then continued up the coast. The people farther up the coast spoke a language Aguilar did not know, but among the 20 women traveling with the Spanish was Malinche, a woman who knew the language. She translated for Aguilar, and he translated the words into Spanish for Cortés. Malinche impressed Cortés. He had her baptized, giving her the name Marina. He called her Doña Marina, and she became one of his closest advisors. From his talks with local rulers, Cortés learned that the Aztec had conquered many peoples in the region and were at war with others, including the powerful Tlaxcalan people. he realized that if he acted carefully, he might convince the Tlaxcalan to join him against the Aztec. As Cortes marched inland to Tlaxcala, his army's physical appearance helped him gain allies. The local people had never seen horses before. Their foaming muzzles and the glistening armor they wore were astonishing and terrifying, and when they charged, it seemed to one Aztec chronicler as if stones were raining on the earth. Equally terrifying were the shooting sparks of the Spanish cannons. After several encounters that displayed Spanish power, the Tlaxcalan agreed to join with Cortes. 200 miles away, Montezuma had to decide how to respond to the Spanish. He believed in a prophecy that said the god Quetzalcoatl, a fair-skinned, bearded deity, would someday return from the east to conquer the Aztec. Montezuma did not know if Cortes was Quetzalcoatl, but he did not want to attack him until he knew for sure. When he learned Cortes was negotiating with the Tlaxcalan, Montezuma sent envoys to meet the Spanish leader. The envoys promised Cortes that Montezuma would pay a yearly tribute to the King of Spain if Cortes halted his advance. To further appease the Spanish, the envoys sacrificed several captives and gave their blood to the Spanish to drink. The act horrified the Spanish and alarmed Montezuma, since he knew that Quetzalcoatl also hated human sacrifice. With a joint Spanish-Tlaxcalan force heading toward him, Montezuma decided to ambush Cortes at the city of Cholula. Warned of the ambush by Doña Marina, the Spanish attacked first, killing over 6,000 Cholulans. Montezuma now believed Cortes could not be stopped. On November 8, 1519, Spanish troops peacefully entered the Aztec capital of Tenochtitlan. Turning point. Cortes defeats the Aztec. Sitting on an island in the center of a lake, the city of Tenochtitlan astonished the Spanish. It was larger than most European cities. The central plaza had a huge double pyramid, and canoes carried people along stone canals around the city. Some of what the Spanish saw here horrified them as well. The central plaza, for example, contained the Tezompantli, a huge rack displaying thousands of human skulls, and the Aztec priests wore their long hair matted down with dried human blood. Surrounded by thousands of Aztec, Cortes decided to take Montezuma hostage. Montezuma, resigned to his fate, did not resist. Under instructions from Cortes, he stopped all human sacrifice and ordered the statues of the gods to be replaced with Christian crosses and images of the Virgin Mary. Enraged at their loss of power, the Aztec priests organized a rebellion in the spring of 1520. The battle raged for days. Spanish cannons and crossbows killed thousands of Aztec. While trying to stop the fighting, Montezuma was hit by stones and later died. Realizing they would soon be overrun, the Spanish fought their way out of the city. Over 450 Spaniards died in the battle, as did more than 4,000 Aztec, in what became known as the Noche Triste, the Sad Night. Although he had been driven from the city, Cortes refused to give up. He and his men took refuge with the Tlaxcalan and began building boats to attack the Aztec capital by water. At the same time, smallpox erupted in the region. Tens of thousands of Native Americans died. As one Aztec recorded, the disease devastated the defenders of Tenochtitlan. While the Spaniards were in Tlaxcala, a great plague broke out here in Tenochtitlan. Sores erupted on our faces, our breasts, our bellies. We were covered with agonizing sores from head to foot. The illness was so dreadful that no one could walk or move. If they did move their bodies, they screamed with pain. Quoted in The Broken Spears, the Aztec account of the conquest of Mexico. Finally, in May 1521, Cortes launched his attack against the greatly weakened Aztec forces. His fleet sank the Aztec canoes and landed troops in the city. By August 1521, Cortes had won. Reading check. Examining. What was the purpose of Hernan Cortes's expedition to Mexico? New Spain expands. After defeating the Aztec, Cortes ordered a new city to be built on the ruins of Tenochtitlan. The city, named Mexico, became the capital of the new Spanish colony of New Spain. Cortés then sent several expeditions to conquer the rest of the region. The men who led these expeditions became known as conquistadors, or conquerors. Pizarro conquers the Inca. While the Spanish were fighting for control of Central America, a Spanish army captain named Francisco Pizarro began exploring South America's west coast. In 1526, he landed in Peru and encountered the Inca Empire. After the Spanish king granted him permission to conquer the Inca, Pizarro returned to Peru in 1531 with a small force. When he later marched inland in the spring of 1532, he learned that a powerful emperor named Atahualpa governed the Inca. After reaching the Incan town of Cajamarca, Pizarro sent his brother to find Atahualpa and invite him to Cajamarca. While waiting for the emperor to arrive, Pizarro hid cavalry and cannons around the town square. If Atahualpa refused to submit to Spain, Pizarro intended to kidnap him. When Atahualpa arrived, he entered the square, backed by some 6,000 of his followers. Pizarro sent a priest to meet Atahualpa first. When the priest gave a Bible to Atahualpa, the emperor threw it to the ground. This rejection of Christianity was enough for Pizarro, who ordered the cannons to fire and the cavalry to charge. He and 20 soldiers then rushed the emperor and took him prisoner. Pizarro tried to rule Peru by keeping Atahualpa as a hostage. Less than a year later, however, he executed the Incan emperor and installed a series of figurehead emperors who ruled in name only and had to follow his orders. Although many people accepted the new system created by Pizarro, others fled to the mountains and continued to fight the Spanish conquistadors until 1572. Searching for cities of gold. Pizarro's successes in finding Peru fueled rumors of other wealthy cities. In 1528, Pánfilo de Narváez searched northern Florida for a fabled city of gold. Finding nothing and having lost contact with his ships, Narváez and his men built rafts and tried to sail to Mexico by following the coastline. They made it to what is today Texas, although most of the men, including Narváez, died in the attempt. The survivors, led by Alvar Núñez Cabeza de Vaca and an enslaved man named Esteban, wandered across Texas and New Mexico before reaching New Spain in 1536. Many conquistadors had also heard tales of the seven golden cities of Cibola, rumored to exist north of New Spain. Hoping to find Cibola, the Spanish sent a large expedition northward in 1540 under the command of Francisco Vázquez de Coronado. For several months, Coronado wandered through the southwestern area of what is today the United States. Members of his expedition traveled west to the Colorado River and east into territory that today belongs to Kansas. Finding nothing but windswept plains and strange, shaggy cows, or buffalo, Coronado returned to Mexico. While Coronado explored the southwestern region of North America, Hernando de Soto took a large expedition into the region north of Florida. De Soto's expedition explored parts of what are today North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, Arkansas, and Texas. As they crisscrossed the region, the Spanish killed many Native Americans and raided their villages for supplies. After more than 4 years of wandering, the expedition returned to New Spain, but without De Soto, who had become sick and died. His men buried him in the Mississippi River. The Spanish settled the Southwest. The failure of explorers to find gold or other wealth north of New Spain slowed Spanish settlement of the region. It was not until 1598 that settlers led by Juan de Oñate migrated north of the Rio Grande. Oñate's expedition almost perished while crossing northern Mexico. When they finally reached the Rio Grande, the survivors organized a feast to give thanks. This Spanish Thanksgiving, called El Pasoans, is still celebrated each April. The Spanish gave the name New Mexico to the territory north of New Spain. Pedro de Peralta, the first governor of New Mexico, founded the capital city of Santa Fe in 1609 or 1610. The Spanish also built forts called presidios throughout the region to protect settlers and to serve as trading posts. Despite these efforts, few Spaniards migrated to the harsh region. Instead, the Catholic Church became the primary force for colonizing the Southwest. Throughout the 17th and 18th centuries, Spanish priests built missions and spread the Christian faith among the Navajo and Pueblo peoples of New Mexico. Beginning in 1769, Spanish missionaries led by the Franciscan priest Junipero Serra took control of California by establishing a chain of missions from San Diego to San Francisco. A road called El Camino Real, or the Royal Highway, linked the missions together. The priests and missionaries in California and those in New Mexico took different approaches to their work. In California, they forced the mostly nomadic Native Americans to live in villages near the missions. In New Mexico, on the other hand, the priests and missionaries adapted their efforts to fit into the lifestyle of the Pueblo people. They built churches near where the Pueblo people lived and farmed, and tried to teach them Catholic ideas and European culture. The Spanish priests tried to end traditional Pueblo religious practices that conflicted with Catholic beliefs. Some priests beat and whipped Native Americans who defied them. In response, a Native American religious leader named Pope organized an uprising against the Spanish in 1680. Some 17,000 warriors destroyed most of the missions in New Mexico. It took the Spanish more than a decade to regain control of the region. Reading check. Identifying. Where did most people who colonized the southwest part of North America come from? Spanish American society. The society that developed in New Spain was a product of the Spanish conquest. The conquistadors were adventurers. Most were low-ranking nobles, called hidalgos, or working-class tradespeople. They had come to the colonies in America in search of wealth and prestige. The society they built in America reflected those goals. The encomienda system. After defeating the Aztec, Cortes rewarded his men by giving each of them control over some of the towns in the Aztec Empire. This was called the encomienda system. Each Spaniard deserving a reward was made an encomendero, or commissioner, and was given control over a group of Native American villages. The villagers had to pay their encomendero a share of the products they harvested or produced. Under this system, the encomendero had obligations too. He was supposed to protect the Native Americans and work to convert them to Christianity. Unfortunately, many encomenderos abused their power. Native Americans were frequently overworked, and many died. A society based on class. The people of Spain's colonies in the Americas formed a highly structured society. Birth, income, and education determined a person's position. At the top were peninsulares, people who had been born in Spain and who were appointed to most of the higher government and church positions. Below the peninsulares were the criollos, those born in the colonies of Spanish parents. Many criollos were wealthy, but high colonial positions were reserved only for the peninsulares. Mestizos made up the next level of society. They were of mixed Spanish and Native American parentage. Since many Spanish immigrants married Native Americans, there were many mestizos, and their social status varied greatly. A few were accepted at the top of society. Others worked as artisans, merchants, and shopkeepers. Most, however, were poor and lived at the lowest level of society. The lowest level also included Native Americans, Africans, and people of mixed Spanish and African or African and Native American ancestry. These people provided most of the labor for New Spain's farms, mines, and ranches. To govern this vast, diverse empire in America, the Spanish king created the Council of the Indies. The council advised the king and watched over all colonial activities. To manage local affairs, the king created a special court in Mexico known as the Audiencia. The Audiencia's members were not only judges, but also administrators and lawmakers. To ensure that his interests were represented, the king divided his American empire into regions called viceroyalties. He then appointed a viceroy to rule each region as his representative. Mining and ranching. When the Spanish realized that most Native American cities did not have much gold, they set up mines and used Native American labor to extract minerals from the ground. Ultimately, however, it was not gold that enriched Spain, but silver. The Spanish discovered huge deposits of silver ore in the 1540s and set up mining camps all across northern Mexico, transforming the economy. The work in the dark, damp mine shafts was very difficult. Many miners were killed by explosions and cave-ins. Others died from exhaustion. Many of the silver mines were located in the arid lands of the north. The land could not grow crops, but it could feed vast herds of cattle and sheep. To feed the miners, Spaniards created large cattle ranches in northern Mexico. These huge ranches covering thousands of acres were called haciendas. The men who herded the cattle were called vaqueros, and cowhands in the United States later adopted their lifestyle. The words lasso and corral are Spanish words that originated with the vaqueros. Reading check. Describing, why did the Spaniards set up mines and cattle ranches in northern Mexico? The French Empire in America. In 1524, 3 years after Cortes conquered the Aztec, King Francis I of France sent Giovanni de Verrazano to map North America's coastline. Francis wanted to find the Northwest Passage, the northern route through North America to the Pacific Ocean. Verrazano mapped the coastline from North Carolina to Newfoundland, but he found no sign of a passage through the continent. 10 years later, as he watched Spain's powerful empire grow stronger, Francis sent another explorer named Jacques Cartier to North America. France explores America. On his first two trips to North America, Cartier discovered and mapped the St. Lawrence River. He then returned a third time in 1541, intending to found a colony, but the harsh winter convinced him to return to France. In the decades after Cartier's last voyage, fighting between Catholics and Protestants tore apart France. For the next 60 years, the French government made no further attempt to colonize North America. In the early 1600s, however, the French government's interest revived. New France is founded. In the 1500s, the French began to fish near North America. The fishing crews often went ashore to trade their goods for furs from the Native Americans. By 1600, fur, particularly beaver fur, had become very fashionable in Europe. As the demand for fur increased, French merchants became interested in expanding the fur trade. In 1602, King Henry IV of France authorized a group of French merchants to create colonies in North America. The merchants hired the royal geographer Samuel de Champlain to help them colonize North America. In 1605, Champlain helped establish a French colony in Acadia, what is today Nova Scotia. The site was attractive because of the many rivers that flowed to Acadia's eastern seaboard. In 1608, he founded Quebec, which became the capital of the new colony of New France. Life in New France. The company that founded New France wanted to make money from the fur trade, so they did not need settlers to clear the land and build farms. As a result, the colony grew slowly, and by 1663 it had just over 3,000 people. Most of the fur traders did not even live in the colony. Known as coureurs de bois, or runners of the woods, the fur traders lived among the Native Americans with whom they traded. They learned their languages and customs and often married Native American women. The fur traders were not the only ones who traveled into the woods to live with the Native Americans. Soon after the founding of Quebec, Jesuit missionaries arrived intending to convert the Native Americans to Christianity. Known as black robes to the Native Americans, the Jesuits tried to live among the local people and teach them the Catholic faith. Reading check. Explaining, why did King Francis I of France send Verrazano and Cartier to America? New France expands. The slow growth of New France worried the French as they watched the Spanish and English build prosperous colonies farther south. Finally, in 1663, France's King Louis XIV seized control of New France and made it a royal colony. His government then launched a series of projects to expand the colony's population. The French government began by shipping over 4,000 immigrants to New France. It then sent over 900 young women to provide wives for the many single men in the colony. If a woman under 16 or a man under 20 married, they received a royal wedding gift. Parents who had more than 10 children received financial bonuses. Fathers whose children did not get married early were fined. By the 1670s, the population had reached 9,000, and by 1760, it was over 70,000. Exploring the Mississippi. In addition to promoting immigration to New France, the French government began exploring North America. In 1673, a fur trader named Louis Jollet and a Jesuit priest named Jacques Marquette set off in search of a waterway the Algonquin people called the Big River, the Mississippi. Canoeing along inland lakes and rivers, the two men finally found the Mississippi River and followed it as far south as the Arkansas River. In 1682, René Robert Cavalier de La Salle, known as Lord La Salle, followed the Mississippi all the way to the Gulf of Mexico, becoming the first European to do so. La Salle then claimed the region for France, and he named the entire territory Louisiana in honor of King Louis XIV. Geography. Settling Louisiana. Count Frontenac, the governor of New France, hoped to ship furs to France by way of the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico. Unfortunately, settling the lower Mississippi proved to be very difficult. The coastline had no good harbors, and shifting sandbars made navigation dangerous. The oppressive heat caused food to spoil quickly. The swamps were breeding grounds for mosquitoes that spread yellow fever and malaria. The French did not permanently settle the region until 1698, when Lord d'Iberville founded Biloxi in what is today Mississippi. Over the next few decades, more French settlements appeared in Louisiana, including Mobile and New Orleans. Farther upriver, the French built several forts, including Fort St. Louis and Fort Detroit, to ensure control of the Mississippi River. The French settlers in southern Louisiana realized that the crops that could be grown there, such as sugar, rice, tobacco, and indigo, required hard manual labor. Few settlers were willing to do that kind of labor unless they were paid extremely well. Enslaved people, on the other hand, could be compelled to do the work. By 1721, the French in Louisiana had imported over 1,800 enslaved Africans to work on their plantations. Rivalry with Spain. The Spanish had always been concerned about the French colonies in North America. Indeed, they had founded the town of St. Augustine, Florida, in 1565 to protect their claim to the region after the French had tried to settle what is today the Carolinas. St. Augustine prospered and became the first permanent town established by Europeans in what is today the United States. The arrival of the French at the mouth of the Mississippi spurred the Spanish into action once again. In 1690, they established their first mission in what is today eastern Texas. In 1716, the first Spanish settlers arrived in eastern Texas to secure the Spanish claim and to block French expansion into the region. The French and Spanish empires in North America now bordered each other. Neither empire, however, posed a serious threat to the other's position in North America. The real challenge to French and Spanish domination of North America would come from another quarter. While Spain focused its colonies primarily on the southwest and France along the Mississippi River, England began settling numerous colonies along a narrow strip of the Atlantic coast. Reading check. Explaining. Why did the French establish forts and settlements along the Mississippi?